Good morning. We're calling this meeting to order. Today is Tuesday, October 13th, 2015. Would you please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The board met today in closed session. Items we met on were item number one, conference with labor negotiators. Direction was given. Item 2E, this is a grievance filed May 14, 2015, SEIU/Elias. Direction was given. And with that, we'll move down to the agenda. We do have a blue slip. This blue slip is addendum number one, General Services Administration. Yes, addendum. Discussion of possible action relative to a request to dispense with formal bidding procedures and two, authorize the treasurer, tax collector, and county council with assistance of auditor and general service director to negotiate final terms and conditions and develop a contract with a bank capable of handling the county's banking services at the best value, and three, authorize treasurer, tax collector to sign a contract and all applicable documents necessary for county banking services. And we've had a request to kind of move that, keep that up on the agenda early, so we're going to make that, we'll make this item number five, and we'll make the item that wasn't number five, State Route 88 Quarter Improvement Project, Revised Phasing and Funding Strategy, we'll make that 5A.
Move approval of the agenda with the addendum.
Second.
We have a motion, a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any nays? Agenda's approved, unanimous. Moving down. Public matters not on the agenda. Discussion items only. No action to be taken. Any person may address the board at this time upon any subject within the jurisdiction the Amber County Board of Supervisors. However, any matter that requires action may refer to staff and or committee for report, recommendation, or possible action at a subsequent meeting. Please note there's a three-minute limit per topic. Any members of the public that would like to address the board on an item that is not on the agenda, now is your time. If you do, please state your name for the record and sign in. Any members of the public? Seeing none, we'll move down to the consent agenda.
Move approval of consent agenda as presented.
We have a motion. Do you have a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Carries unanimous. Moving on the regular agenda, we'll take the addendum first.
Chairman, members of the board, John Hopkins, General Services Director. Late last week, I was notified by the treasurer tax collector that the folks that we've been doing banking with for some period of time had given him a verbal notice that 90 days they plan on terminating their contract. That's Bank of America. Mike's here today and can talk about those particulars, but after I met with counsel, the auditor's office, and Mike, there's just not sufficient time to do the advertising and that full RFP process in order to make that transition. So the request is to dispense with that formal procurement process and then let the treasurer tax collector sign those banking documents and contract contingent upon council's review and the assistance with myself and the county auditor as well. Any questions?
Are there some special services that the county needs from a banking institution that our current one is no longer willing to provide? Is that the reason for the cancellation? Or? No?
I mean, essentially, I received a call, who, by the way, we've been banking with. We were basically told that there were new regulations that had been put into place to shore up the financial establish new standards for liquidity, leverage, and capital for banks, and that B of A needed to increase their liquidity because of those regulations. Government accounts by law have to be collateralized at 110%, and the bank was not interested in keeping our account as they felt
right.
We were told that the regulations are stricter on larger global banks because I know that at least two other counties received calls or were informed of this in person. I've heard rumblings that there may be other counties in California that are affected by this. I've also all government agencies.
Dodd-Frank provisions?
Yes.
Mr. Treasurer?
Yes.
The federal regulations of Dodd-Frank?
Yes.
So my question is, given the difficulty apparently that these larger banks are facing due to these new federal regulations, how will we go about, without an RFP process, how will we go about talking to banks that may be fine with those new regulations?
Well, we are.
Well, we have a scope of work. Actually, Mike was lucky to find a RFP that was currently done, not just this last year, from Butte County for the similar services.
Okay.
That also allows piggybacking, so that's one option. So there is a scope of work that Mike has begun to develop. I'll help him with that, so we'll county council. We will deliver that scope of work to all local banks. We know that there are two or three that are interested, as well as a list that Mike would provide to us. Probably it would include maybe U.S. Bank as well, who is the one that was successful with Butte County, and target that way. But it's just to speed the process up because the transition in making those banking services for the county special districts and the school districts is going to take some time.
Mike, my question is, the other counties that already the hammers dropped on them, was this pretty much the same bank or was other institutions as well?
No, this is all B of A to my knowledge. I have not heard of any other banks taking this tact. I've heard that some of the other larger banks are interpreting things differently. May still be able to bank banks. Have to see. Best price and give us the best value and still provide all the services we need. I should mention that this is going to be a process even after we've chosen a bank. It affects my office very significantly. Allow us to bank is their banking system. It affects the school district, it affects special districts, the county, and it affects just about every county department. Not necessarily in their deposits with us, their typical check and cash deposits, but there are a number of county departments that receive electronic transfers.
So 90 days is not nearly enough, yes. So I mean,
it's going to be tough. We've been told there's a possibility of an extension of that, but we haven't seen that in writing or what the details of that are. It was inferred that we're going to have to change our way we do business a little bit to accommodate that extension. So I think at this point we have to assume that there is no extension that we need.
Is there, with the county acting essentially as the depository for so many different special districts, including the school district, I think a water agency is included in that list as well. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but there's a host of them. Do we charge a cost recovery fee for those services that we provide for those special districts?
Entities that have funds in the county treasury, the way though our fees, our banking fees and our other costs are paid is from our investments, the interest of, or the, that interest is apportioned to the various funds. Out of that, the cost of the treasury and our banking services. So, yes.
Would those apply to these additional costs that are going to be borne by the county due to the need to switch over banks, or should we consider a special?
I don't know that there's going to be a lot of monetary cost.
A lot of time and a lot of departments.
A lot of time. I don't know that they're passing that on. Have to make it work. My salary is set. My chief deputy salary is set.
Right.
The auditor salary is set. We're just going. The only cost that I can come up with at this point, and I don't know how significant it would be because it's the cost of the auditor's office, not for our office, but they will have to have new warrants printed up with the new banking information on them. I've talked to the school district. Their system allows them, they basically have a blank check stock, and IT issue. Our system right now would require new warrant stock, and again, I don't know what the cost of that. Let's say this kind of hit me out of the blue. Not heard anything about this. Last week, I got a phone call from our bank rep who said he had some bad news. Asked if there was any chance for and told me he would pass it up, but he doubted it.
It sounds like a decision that came down from the top.
It is a corporate decision, yeah, on B of A's part. It's interesting to me that they're affecting the smaller entities and not the larger entities who have much more money with them. Our daily balance with B of A is.
Now, what do you mean it's affecting the smaller entities, not the large ones? They're only kicking out the smaller counties and smaller.
That's what we're seeing so far, anyway. Yes, I do know.
You don't think it's government versus private driven because of the requirement of 110% collateralization on government?
I've not heard any of the larger counties affected by this. To be quite honest, I don't know exactly what county banks with B of A. Other than, I do know, I think if Santa Clara is in the process of converting from B of A to another bank, but I don't know why.
I'm kind of wondering, you said the school district had the blank stock, and maybe it'd be a time for us to transition to something like that.
That's something I don't know if that's within the capabilities or our financial system.
It's probably a printer and whatever, you know.
Yeah, that's something.
Something to look at. I don't know if it's worthwhile, but
well, I think if, from my perspective, it might be worthwhile. Whether we have the time to do that now,
right?
I just want to be able to get a new system in place that can, as closely as possible, replicate what we have and what we need.
But it's also a time for you to look at the bank check stock issue and issues like that, and see is it a time to change things like that so it won't be an issue ever again in the future.
Correct, and that may be
look
something,
for opportunities.
That may be something that comes out of this,
like changing the 90 days.
Yeah,
provision.
But it doesn't sound like we have much of an option on this. So.
At the end of the day, it'd be nice to track what our costs end up being, if that's possible.
Well, again, I don't know that you can...
You can get close.
Yeah, but how do I account for my cost?
Right.
Whether I work 24/7...
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
you're making the point I've made on other cost recovery proposals, Mike.
The thing is,
salary anyway.
You know, we know we're going to have costs with IT.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, probably some of the auditor's office. So, I'd say to do as best we can. I mean,
that's what we're looking for.
Yeah. I don't think we have a choice.
No, I mean, as far as tracking, I think it's important.
Cost, yeah.
I can understand your concern. Just from a philosophical standpoint, I have a hard time passing those costs along to auditors who have no say in this.
Right.
We have no say in it either. So.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line for me, it's, you know, it's going to cost some money, and I'd like to know how much in the end as best we can, because we're right in the middle of bargaining with a whole bunch of units. And, you know, they look at it a different way than we do sometimes. So it's one of those unforeseen things that we get hit with all the time. It's just like the time Electra Road washed out, and we found out it was a county road. And it cost a lot of money to fix it. So
I'm sure you plan to keep us updated as you hurriedly move through that 90 days.
Our first, obviously, though, is collecting a bank.
Yes, of course.
Oh. You know, at this time, is there any members of the public that would like to comment on this issue? Seeing none?
I'd move the authorization for the Treasurer, Tax Collector, and County Council to work with the Auditor and General Service Department to negotiate final terms and conditions of new contract with the bank, and dispense with the formal bidding procedures.
I'll second that.
And we'll authorize the Treasurer Tax Collector to sign all contract and all applicable documents, too. Is that part of your motion? Okay, a motion is second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? There you have it. Unanimous.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, the good news, Mike, your season's almost over November 1st, so you can burn the weekend oil here. And
didn't even buy a tag this year.
You know, at this time, we're gonna go backwards just a little bit, back to public matters, not on the agenda. Some folks had called me and asked about how they'd bring something before the board, and I told them public matters on the agenda, and they came in right about time. Mike started in with this item, so if they'd like to come forward this time, I'm reopening public matters not on the agenda. Morning.
Montoric. I am a voting citizen of Amador County. And I'm here this morning to ask you to look into Jefferson. I found out about it through El Dorado County, which is where I used to live. And I'm tired of our vote not counting and not proper representation. I've lived here my whole life, and with all the unconstitutional laws that are being passed, I am seriously considering not settling in California. The state of Jefferson motto is lower taxes, smaller government, and personal freedoms. I attended the hearing at the Board of Supervisor meeting in El Dorado County, where they had so many people come to the meeting to hear about the state of Jefferson that the CHP had to shut down the freeway off-ramp. The state of Jefferson is looking to declaration in December, so any of the counties that want to be on the table to talk about what they're going to do, they say to sign so that you can be at the meeting to discuss what the state of Jefferson is about. I strongly encourage you to look into this so that you can represent us properly. Thank you.
Did you sign in?
I didn't.
Sign the roster right there in front, if you would, please. Board, did you have any questions for the young lady?
Well, sure.
Matters.
My understanding is, and so please correct me, I may be wrong, that to actually adopt this state of Jefferson concept, it would take a change to both our state constitution and the U.S. Constitution.
For to recede?
Yes.
Yeah, they're going before the state Senate, and then if it passes, they will go before the U.S. Senate.
Thank you.
I believe there's a town hall meeting coming up this week in Calaveras County, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe it's next week.
It's okay. Either tonight or tomorrow.
Yeah, and I thought it was this week.
But you know who controls the state Senate and the state assembly?
L.A.
Probably people that aren't going to vote for this. So I don't think it's a bad thing to hear about it, but I doubt if it would ever make it through our state legislature.
Trying, so.
Well, appreciate your information. I think it's something we should look at and hear some testimony at some point in time. So I think we'll schedule it for an agenda. If we have your name there, we'll notify you and let you know.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members of the public? Seeing none, move back to our regular agenda. We'll take item 5A. This is State Route 88 Corridor Improvement Project, Revised Phasing and Funding Strategy.
Good morning. Aaron Bruzzatori, Community Development Agency Director. Before you today is a resolution that's been drafted to support allocation of funding for the plan specs and estimates phase of State Route 88 Corridor Improvement Project. We have a presentation here from our consultant, Mark Thomas and Company, to answer some questions. We've done a lot of work since March of this year when we went out for the RFP and we selected Mark Thomas to do some refined phasing and funding and informal value engineering analysis of the project. And today they're going to present some of their findings and let you know how we're moving forward with that. That presentation, there will be a good opportunity to ask questions from the board. All of this is we're not changing programming of the PS&E, which is important. Now is the time where we have to ask the California Transportation Commission to allocate the funding of $1.6 million that's currently programmed for this project. Questions right now, otherwise I'm going to turn it over to our consultant team.
A little over $1.6 million.
A little over $1.6 million.
Aaron, excuse me. I've heard from a few people, not very many, upcountry, that since the county has taken over this project, they don't have as much information about the project. So I just thought I'd share that with you.
Absolutely, and we've been working, digging into this project. It's a factory of making a product, and right now is a window into that product as to what we've been working on, and I hope those people are here. Urban, if not, there'll be another presentation of ACT.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, and I think that information would be important to get out so the public could attend the ACTC meeting. I spent a great deal of time on my holiday yesterday reading through this, and I like what you guys have come up with to a certain extent.
Likewise. Are the members of the public that wanted more information on this here today?
No.
No.
Yes, that would have been a good idea.
Good thing. Yeah.
With that, I'll turn it over to Matt Brogan, the project manager.
Good morning, supervisors. I'm Matt Brogan with Mark Thomas and Company. Again, we're going to go over a lot of what we've been looking at over the past several months and then open it up to any specific questions that you all have after the presentation. So just some elements and summary of what we've been looking at for the corridor since about April of this year. The summary of our work is we wanted to make sure that this phasing and funding and value engineering was consistent with the purpose and need currently being developed in the environmental stage of the project. We needed to address the concerns of the County Board of Supervisors, ACTC, county staff, and Caltrans. Our goal going into this was to identify a phase that was within the range of $6 to $12 million of construction. We also wanted to look at elements of the phasing that and how those elements might fit with other funding programs available for the corridor. We needed to make sure that we kept the independent utility components of these phases to make it consistent with the environmental document. So again, the last 4 or 5 months we spent gathering information on the corridor, doing our value engineering studies. We had a peer review of the project designs, and then we've done some refinement of the concepts to the phases that we're presenting to you today. So this is just a snapshot of the previous study priorities. This was the phasing that is currently within the environmental document. Essentially consisted of three phases. Phase A was in the center of Pine Grove, right around Volcano Road. Phase B was on the downcountry end, extending down Climax up through Ridge Road. And then Phase C was on the upcountry end, adjacent to Tebode Road. So that was the starting point of our process, initially within the environmental document. And then there was a separate set of priorities, I think established by this board in about September of last year. So as we stepped through this phasing process, these are the priorities that we kept in mind as we developed our concepts. Just a high-level overview of those, some improvements in Ridge Road to anticipate and accommodate proposed development there, traffic signal timing along the corridor through Pine Grove, pedestrian improvements in specific areas of the corridor, in particular at the Town Hall near Irish Town Road, improvements to Volcano Road, Highway 88, adjacent to Pine Grove Elementary, access to Pine Grove Elementary, and then improvements to Tebode Road in anticipation of future traffic needs and development there as well. So this is a snapshot of the project limits for our phasing analysis. The overall project limits extend from Climax Road all the way up to Tebode. And as we started to look at these improvements and how to refine those concepts, we really wanted to focus on specific intersections and how these improvements might fit within specific needs at those intersections. So I'm going to start with Ridge Road and work my way out to the east at Tebode. And what I'm going to go over is the existing condition and then some of the phased elements that we've looked at within our Phase A improvements. So if we start at Ridge Road, this is the existing condition, existing signalized intersection. This is the Pine Grove Shopping Center, which is essentially complete with the development on site, even though it doesn't show in this aerial photo. We've got single left turn lanes and a free right turn from Highway 88 onto Ridge Road. So the key aspects of this first Phase A, we've shifted the alignment of Highway 88 a little bit to the north. And that was done for really one specific reason. The previous design had included a large retaining wall within this area. As we shifted that alignment, we were able to eliminate that retaining wall and replace that with an overall slope easement. So that will be a cut slope in this location as opposed to a retaining wall. Should save a significant cost within the area. We've added dual left turn lanes and modified the signalization of this intersection. We've extended the left turn pocket onto Ridge Road, and we've formalized the right turn pocket and eliminated that free right movement here at Ridge. Those are all consistent with the previous designs, but again, have improved that signal timing, have improved the overall intersection to accommodate that development, and then have improved the overall safety and operations along Highway 88. So this element of this phase, and we're going to look at it in different chunks, but what we've developed is a phase that is corridor-wide from Climax Road, just east of Climax Road all the way to Tebode. So this piece at Ridge Road is around $5.8 million of total construction cost, and that extends about 3,200 feet west and about 2,000 feet east of Ridge Road.
I will say that was one of the primary concerns expressed by the community at a Pine Grove Town Hall meeting was that free right turn movement, or what was called a slip lane,
yes,
coming down 88 and onto Ridge.
So. Yeah, so we formalized that with about a 250-300 foot right turn pocket that comes into the signalized intersection and have provided that pedestrian crossing at the area as well. So the next section was Irish Town Road. This is really the center of Pine Grove. As you well know, there's a significant increase in pedestrian activity. This is right from Google Earth, but this is really consistent of how the corridor operates. You have pedestrians operating along the existing shoulder along Highway 88. We do have the pedestrian crossing town halls off to your left. This is the existing pedestrian signal across 88 and a very high level of pedestrian movement within this area, really as it relates to east and west along 88 and then the crossing of Highway 80 at this location as well. So as we looked at priorities here, this is the existing condition. Town Hall is there. Here's the existing crossing. Here's Pine Grove Community Park. We really wanted to emphasize the pedestrian movements and try to look at ways to enhance the safety for the pedestrians within the area. We've done that in a couple of ways. So we've narrowed the lanes through this area to 11 feet. That is going to require some coordination with Caltrans, essentially obtaining a design exception to go to that 11-foot lanes. We do think that's an attainable design exception based on the function and operation of the area. It's a little hard to see in this graphic, but here with the shortened lanes, the reduced lanes, and some pedestrian bulb outs there at Town Hall, we've actually shortened that pedestrian crossing to minimize the distance that the pedestrians have to cross. We have additional on-street parking in this location adjacent to the park, and then in this location just upcountry from Town Hall. We have formalized a bus stop location. Again, a little difficult to see, but we would propose a bus stop at this location adjacent to the parking, right adjacent to Town Hall. And then we would add a pedestrian signal, a flashing beacon signal that is pedestrian actuated with a push button to make the flashing beacons go off as pedestrians cross within this area.
You refer to that as a hawk type?
Exactly, a hawk type signal at that location.
That doesn't have the embedded lights in the bumpers in the roadway?
Not the traditional hawk type. So again, the board priority items that this would accommodate, again, improving the pedestrian crossing at 88, improving the overall safety and operations to the corridor, and then the relocation of the bus stop to make access in and around Town Hall.
So the bus stop's going to be moved east of the existing bus stop?
Yeah, it is one proposal. We also have some elements that would look to provide a bus stop potentially off-site within a potential parking lot area. That is one design option.
That would be my preferred, since it's my district.
Sure.
And the reason is there's quite a number of parking places that are taken up with that present bus stop, and parking is a big issue there, and it would be good to have the parking lot and the bus stop at the parking lot.
And we do have, I believe that was covered in the memo, and there's some coordination with Amador County Transit we'd have to look at.
And I urge everybody to look really seriously at this crosswalk. I would like to get it right the first time, because it is really dangerous, and there's been a couple people that have been killed there. And what they're right now is lousy at best. So, and there's all kinds of designs, I'm sure. I took a picture of one that I was in North Carolina recently, and it had actually a little bit of an island in the center that you could get to.
Yeah, and we did consider those kind of options, and I think there's some issues with left turns out of Town Hall that might preclude the center island. But again, I think there's a lot of advanced technology with these pedestrian crossings that we can consider as well.
You know, question where you have the bulb out immediately to the left of that or west of there?
Talking here?
Yes. A lot of people park to the left of that along Highway 88. Is that still there? There's still going to be parking there?
Well, we're proposing this would be the upcountry bus stop there and the downcountry bus stop there. We do have some on-street parking identified, you know, at this location. And then I believe we have some potentially proposed adjacent to the park. But, you know, really as we look to finalize the location of those bus stops and keeping an eye on maximizing the number of on-street parking spaces.
Again, I'd like to do away with that downcountry one. You know, have the one across the highway. There's now one at Dollar General. So I urge you to seriously look at eliminating that one by the town hall.
Okay. Well, you're looking to completely eliminate the downcountry bus, so
maybe you can go someplace else.
Well, would you have them turn left into the parking on the other side of the street? Is that what you're proposing?
Yeah, cross and we safe walk.
And yeah, at the end of the presentation, we do have all the design files available, so we can kind of show you what we would be proposing with an off-street bus circulation
You know, one nice thing about that the ball bounce you have is I've noticed if you're coming out of the park, and there's a lot of people at that park, they park right where the ball bounce is now, and you can't see down that highway.
Yeah.
At all. Another concern I have, and I probably should have brought up earlier, is in general, we're talking about narrowing the travel lanes from standard 12-foot width.
Standard 12-foot to 11.
To 11-foot.
Yes.
Throughout the corridor or just at that bulb out?
Really, it's through the main core at Irishtown. You know, we would look to reduce it as you're coming down country, you know, kind of as you approach Volcano, start to reduce those lanes. But as we get up towards Tabode, we would propose 12-foot lanes and then have the 11-foot through the center area at Irishtown.
Because one problem is 11-foot is pretty narrow. I understand you want to slow down traffic,
yeah.
And the reason traffic will slow down is it becomes dangerous. So I'm kind of going, well, are you making it dangerous so people slow down?
Yeah.
But diesel trucks are a lot of them are 9.5 feet wide.
Right.
And
right.
if you have a semi going down that road, that trailer is going to track and cut a little bit. So
yeah.
And there's a lot of heavy traffic goes through that town and even over width loads. And I wish I had caught it earlier.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, the design coordination with Caltrans, their design standard is actually related specifically to truck volumes through the corridor as it relates to lane width. So the truck volumes that we have through 88 are actually a little bit more than what their design standards call for. We have had success with reduced lane widths at 11 feet through corridors with truck traffic. And I don't want to say it. You've got to take a look at the amount of trucks, the significance of the trucks moving through there.
There's a lot.
And again, it is a final design aspect we need to look at. We do have the two-way left turn lane in there that provides a little bit of a buffer for those trucks for a little bit of the off-track. But again, it's something we do.
So there's somebody in that left turn lane, there's no room, no additional room. And legally, they can't be going across that lane. If they hit somebody, they're in trouble. Just before we get too far down the road, I'd like to bring that up because I have a real concern over that.
Okay.
I should have caught it earlier, so my apologies.
Yeah, that's fine. It's something we can certainly review.
But I guess at the end of the day, Caltrans will have the final say on that.
They will have the final say, yeah. Okay. The next component and focus area was at Volcano Road. So the existing condition, as you well know, Pine Grove Elementary is located in this corner. We have the existing intersection with Volcano Road. And really, as it relates to traffic and pedestrian crossings, a lot of the issues are with the spacing of that driveway into and out of the school and Volcano Road. So as we look to refine the design, we wanted to really look at ways to reduce the pedestrian crossings at the intersection, shorten that crosswalk, and we wanted to look to ways to more formalize and provide some distance to that access at Pine Grove Elementary. So as you can see here, the previous design within the project report actually brought that intersection closer to the driveway. One of the design refinements we've made is to maintain that existing skew on the intersection and bring that in essentially to the same location that the intersection exists today and not move it any further to the east. What that does is provide us more distance between the signalized intersection and that exit driveway at the elementary school. You'll see here we have maintained a driveway access into an existing business. It's not currently occupied, but we wanted to make sure we maintain access to there. The previous design showed that as a full right-of-way take, and we have shown maintaining access to that location by moving the or maintaining the intersection at its current location.
You know, a question on that. That was ATI parts, and I believe that's being closed down.
That's my understanding, yes. Yeah.
We're closed. And I know they did want a rather steep price for it. Is that, or at least that's what was being looked at.
Right.
And I'm wondering if it's being disclosed, if there'd be any lesser value in that land, and would it be beneficial to doing your project? Could you save money by buying that land if their price is more reasonable?
Yeah, I mean, and ultimately, if you look at the long-term improvements needed at Volcano, it's likely that that business would need to be purchased. For the ultimate project, as we look at this Phase A, we have a project that can move forward with Phase A without impacting it. But again, long-term, I do think it's in the best interest of the county to...
Maybe the school district can buy it. You know, I know the owner of the property, and he just loved have fun with Caltrans. They've had several takings of his property, and he always comes out on top. So I'm sure he's looking forward to that opportunity.
Sure. And it would open up a lot of opportunities, I think, for the project and the long-term project if that parcel is, in fact, acquired. But, again, not needed for
again,
phase
it's A. Not, now that it's not an operating business on that parcel, and it's a vacancy and essentially raw land, could adjust the price a little bit.
Thought.
A good thought.
So the other key aspect to our phasing is really looking at ways to modify the circulation at the school and provide an enhanced access while keeping an eye towards a manageable construction budget. So one of the ways we've done that, and again, it's a little hard to see on this graphic, but we are proposing a loading zone along Highway 88 just in front of the school. We would pull the cars off and have a buffer between the traffic, and not a physical buffer, but a striped buffer between the traffic traveling down country on Highway 88, and give the ability for parents during drop-off to pull into this area and drop their kids off for access to the school. There's a couple of different options we would look at to provide that access into the school. We do have some ADA challenges at that driveway. We could look to provide access through here, assuming we could make the ADA work. And then consistent with what is in the current project report, we could also look at an access here from the center, essentially have that drop-off area into the elementary school. And again, long-term, the plan for circulation in and of and out of the school would be to provide an access onto Volcano and provide access out at that signalized intersection. There's a couple of options we've identified to value engineer that access. Those are in the ultimate phase, again. But what we've proposed with Phase A is consistent with what would be needed long-term and would not preclude any of that happening long-term with the project.
In the traffic manual, you couldn't put any barriers up between the pullout and in the highway, right?
Yeah, I don't think there's space for it. There's offset requirements you would have. And obviously there'd be some coordination with the school about, how that area would be accessed, how it would be accessed during peak hours, and making sure that we have safe ingress and egress. There is precedent for this on a Caltrans facility. I believe it's in Ojai, California, where they do have an on-street drop-off area along a state highway. I don't recall the state route.
To that point, though, there's in traveling that and taking a hard look at it over the weekend, there's the school has quite a bit, I believe it's school ground, that must come right up against the Caltrans right-of-way. Now, currently, they've got some kind of little garden spot or something out there in it now with some raised planter beds. Could the school dedicate some right-of-way adjacent to Caltrans to widen that area that can be utilized for that drop-off zone and be able to have a curb separation between the roadway and the drop-off location?
It's an option. It definitely is a potential option. There are some grade challenges on site. The school does sit higher than Highway
88. Right, yeah, it would necessitate a retaining wall without a doubt, but I think it already does.
Yeah, and again, working with the school district to really understand how they plan long-term circulation on site, I think is going to be beneficial. But there are options that we would have to enhance this or modify it.
My big concern is safety is paramount with this. So, the school district needs to step forward too and help us on this. Rather than let us take the whole boat.
Let us foot the bill for their problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
So moving on to Tabode Road, up on the east end of the project. This is the existing condition, the existing truck climbing lane stops in and around here. We have, fairly heavy left turn and right turn movements into Tabode, along with the through movements coming from upcountry on Highway 88.
Where does that truck climbing lane sort of merge back into one now?
Somewhere in and around here. The crest of that curve is right in about here as you're coming over.
Yeah.
So it starts to drop back here, and I think by the time you've hit that curve, it's essentially
you're down to one lane at that point.
Yeah. So the key consideration for our design element at Tabode was to really allow these left turns to function out of Tabode onto 88 while enhancing safety and allowing the through movement on 88 moving down country to continue unimpeded. So again, a little difficult to see, But what we've done is actually provide this buffer, striped buffer, at about 10 to 12 feet, and we've taken the through movement and pushed it to the north to allow that movement to continue to function while these left turns, and this is a, would be a left turn merge lane, out of Thibode to merge with traffic on 88. We have the left turn in through this pocket here. Through movement would continue on Highway 88, and then left turns out at Thibode would function to turn into this merge lane. So essentially it's a bypass lane for the westbound traffic. It does allow, there is not needed to be signalized with Phase A, and it does not meet signal warrants for Phase A. But what this allows is when the development proposed off of Thibode does come in, they could be conditioned with providing this signal at this location. So
they already are.
Yeah, good point. Phase A does not preclude that signal, and this configuration could be maintained with the signalized intersection in the long term.
There may be some money from a previous development that was mitigation money for that intersection. I don't know if there's still money in that pot or not, but might look into that. Say what?
What was the name of that pot?
I can't think of the name
Pine
of
Acres
it.
North?
Pine Acres, too.
No.
Wildwood?
Wildwood. It's Roy Goulart did the development at the time, and so there may be some money left into that fund for taking a look at.
Are you working with Caltrans at all here on the speed going west as you're coming up the hill where they have the turn lane? Because naturally, when people hit that turn lane, they're going, last time I came home from Tahoe, I had people passing me going 70 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And they go up that hill at 70 miles an hour.
Right.
And by the time they hit Taboo Road, they're probably going 60 miles an hour.
Right about here, yeah.
Really dangerous.
Yeah, and you know, that's why we wanted to provide a sufficient buffer for all those left turns, right? And then, you know, yes, they're collecting speed here, but then as we come down into town, the hope would be that through some physical measures, reduced lane speed or some friction on the outside of the roadway, we'd be slowing that traffic down before it hits downtown. There's no more questions on Thibode.
You don't think all these signals, when they're in, they're going to be timed?
Yes. Yeah.
That'd be great.
Absolutely. So we'll provide conduit to provide that ITS element through the corridor.
Just one quick question, if you don't mind, seeing as we're kind of to the end, at least, of the corridor length. And I'll use Taboo Road's estimate here. You've got $1.5 million cost estimate for what you're proposing there. Just from what I've seen in the past, that seems awful light. So I need to question you, being as a lot of this has been budget-driven,
sure,
how accurate are your construction estimates?
So we did take a very detailed look at the construction costs. You know, obviously we're still preliminary in the elements of design, but there are accurate construction costs. You know, and we'll get into the total cost of the corridor in a minute. And what we've stripped out from the previous estimates are things like pavement rehabilitation. The reduction in retaining walls has been significant through the value engineering aspect, and we've really looked to defer as much of the hard construction costs into future phases as we can. But to answer your question, they are accurate construction costs, and I realize that they are lower than what you've seen previously, but we feel that they're very accurate numbers as it relates to a construction budget.
So
and again, these are construction only and not right-of-way or utilities at this point either.
And there's not a lot of excavation work with this particular proposed site. Most of the widths or sizes are
correct
there already.
Yeah, okay. And the big difference...
So it's just a striping then at that
point.
Yeah,
the big difference is the removal of the pavement rehab and the deferral of the pavement rehabilitation to a future phase.
I think Caltrans should step up on that. They're rehabilitating the pavement all the way along Highway 88 in recognition of their requirement to do so now. They should extend that through the Pine Grove corridor.
And as a result, it does eliminate excavation within the existing roadbed, and we're utilizing the existing pavement and just have new pavement out on the outsides. We would provide like a slurry seal or a nominal overlay for a nice clean finish on the striping, but that is a significant reduction in cost. So again, consistent with board priorities, we did look at opportunities for chain up areas. I know that was a priority with the board, and you know there are three pretty good opportunities within the area. One is just east of Climax Road, and then we have two on the upcountry end, one west of Volcano, and then one within the area between Volcano and Tabot Road. We would look to provide these areas within areas of the corridor that have sufficient right-of-way to provide them. Would be a formal chain-up area with some pavement and area for folks to pull off the highway to get the chain installation on and then back on Highway 88. So, again, haven't finalized the location, but there are options available to us to provide that chain-up area. So on to costs, and how we've done this is break it down to how we've presented it to you today. But I do want to emphasize this is a corridor-wide improvement. These are what we call station ranges, and the station ranges from 25 plus 50 to 141 plus 50. You'll notice there are no gaps within those station ranges. So when we say it's the Ridge Road portion of the project, it extends, you know, both east and west of Ridge Road. And by the time you add these up, we do have a corridor-wide improvement within Phase A. So we've identified the Ridge Road improvements at around $5.8 million. The Irish Town signal and bus stop relocations around 2.2. Volcano Road has an improvement cost of around $2 million, and again, that is with a significant reduction to the off-site improvements proposed at the school. And then Tabot Road with the bypass lane and turn lane modifications at around $1.5 million. That identifies a total construction cost of $11.6 million, and again, I want to emphasize that this is construction costs only. We do have a right-of-way component of that, which I'll get into in 1 second. And then the utility relocations costs would be separate from these as well.
But just for the board's edification, in case you've forgotten, right-of-way funding and PS&E, the plan, specs, and engineering, has already been reserved or programmed, whatever the key term is, at Caltrans through last year's RTIP process. So that money's been set aside. I think it's about a total of $5 or $6 million to accomplish both PS&E and right-of-way.
And then the last aspect of this, and I think one of the key elements of it, is the identification of potential funding sources beyond the STIP to fund improvements along the corridor. And we've identified several. So the first one, obviously, is the STIP. And that, you know, what we've identified here is potential total construction dollars available to the county. We have not broken those down, you know, specifics to each phase yet. But within the STIP, there would be potentially about $18 million available that can be used for construction right-of-way, preliminary engineering. A lot of elements of the project would be eligible for active transportation program funding, ATP funding. That would be for sidewalks, bike lanes, shoulders, narrowed lanes through the corridor. There's about $2 million of potential construction costs of funding available through the ATP. The Tiger Grant, should the county be lucky enough to get a Tiger Grant, would really construct any or all of these improvements. That would be about $30 million available there. The Federal Lands Access Program, FLAP, that's a program through FHWA, that would provide potentially some construction funding for pavement rehabilitation. That's around $6 million that potentially could be available. Again, there's a grant process with that. The pavement rehab is also eligible for SHOP funding, should Caltrans make that available. The FTA, Federal Transit Administration, things like the bus stops on street or off street could potentially be FTA eligible. HR3 HSHIP is a funding program related to highway safety improvements, really specific to intersection locations where there's a documented safety concern. There is potential funding there for any realignment at Climax Road. And then regional traffic mitigation fees, I believe the county's identified about $1 million of the mitigation fees that are eligible for corridor-wide improvements. And again,
Is there a documented safety concern on Climax Road?
I believe there is an accident history there. And the way the HSHIP funding works...
Well, how many accidents?
I don't recall off the top of my head.
Not if you're going to find many, except for the guy that drove through Climax and went off the edge on the other side.
Right. And how that program works.
He was probably drunk. So
probably.
That was a couple of deaths, too. Better watch what you're saying there.
And how that program works is it's a very formulaic, and you take the number of accidents, and they call them mitigation measures. or countermeasures to those accidents, and you plug it into an application formula, and if it pencils out to a cost-benefit ratio that's favorable for the project, it's eligible for the county. I know Caltrans just released a new funding round for their HCIP, and I believe they got over 210 applications, and 197 of them were funded. So I do think that's a very realistic potential for the corridor.
As I recall from our last discussion on this, this item was supposed to be basically put out of the funding on the chart that we had. So I don't know why it's even included in here as one of the what I would consider one of the major items.
For Climax. Again, this chart was just to look at funding options and potential funding options, and so we haven't prioritized these at all. But
I don't think we totally can it. We said if Caltrans wanted to do it, go ahead. If they paid for it, is my recollection of it.
I'm just taking it the way it was represented to us in our last discussion, and that seems to be changed now.
Well, no, I think what it is, Richard, is it was really maybe Aaron might want to address it.
I think I could go back to the tape, and the tape.
Well, we didn't want to.
That is correct.
We didn't want to include. My recollection is we didn't want to include it in the total costs that we were assuming for the Pine Grove Corridor Improvement Project, utilizing our STIP funds and so forth. But if the project could come forward under an HCIP, I don't see why you wouldn't avail yourselves of that.
So the clarifying point that I'd like to make is, it was specifically said we don't want to spend a lot of STIP money down at this location. We have the opportunity in the phase that we're in to refine those the geometric drawings for this area, so that way if we do end up applying for an HCIP, we have the infrastructure, we have the lines on the paper to help facilitate what that improvement would be.
And the environmental clearance, because that was part of the total.
And the environmental clearances, and it also would allow us sometime in the future, if this doesn't move forward with an HCIP project at Climax specifically, we have a set of documents that is accumulated, sitting in the file, and if that becomes part of our capital improvement program, you pick it up, you dust it off, and we have a spot where we can move forward from. That's where we're trying to get this to. It's not to move it to construction, and that table when, just identify that possibly could be funded through something other than STIP.
When would those environmental documents become stale? They only last, 2-3 years before they become stale?
I would say a range of 3 to 5 years, depending on, the impacts at a specific location.
And I think it was said at our last meeting that this would be a project that would not be done for some time, and I think 2044 is the extent of this, so clearly if that's the case, the environmental documents would become stale before that time.
But there's also the possibility that HCIP application is submitted, which is successful for this, which could be sooner than that. Or this project gets elevated on the capital improvement program, which would be sooner. Those are just possibilities.
But is this, one other question is, would this be the place we would want to make those applications in the county, or are there other places where there are higher risk and safety concerns?
That's what we, I would bring that before the board for selection. Hey, we've got these three areas. Which ones would you guys like to prioritize for a HCIP application? From where I stand right now, I think I'd want to move forward with something on Latrobe Road if we could. There's a lot of accidents along that corridor. It gets a lot of traffic. But this would be another such instance that could be eligible.
I understand that this would be done more to get truck traffic, keep it on Ridge Road out of Jackson and Climax, and then keep it out of Jackson more than anything else.
I don't know if I would say keeping it out of. There's a lot of increase. The truck traffic is increasing on Ridge Road, and again, every time we put a signal in the Jackson area, it's going to send more people that way just because it takes them less time to get from point A to point B.
Well, I can tell you, as of yesterday, all the belly dumps bringing pavement up for the Caltrans projects on 88 were coming Climax yesterday.
So they're there, and that may be something that would, whether we prioritize this or not, because they can use it and they are using it.
Having said that, and having driven that in a truck and trailer, it's not a great road at that very end of that stretch to meet another truck on.
It's not.
I drove that road for 13 years. And
in your van.
The trucks negotiated pretty well.
In your van. The time I was on the backhoe trailer up, a big rig come down and his trailer went up on the bank because there was no room for either one of us. So, it is a problem, and maybe it might not be a priority now. I wouldn't say can it, keep it on the shelf.
I would disagree that there's a major problem there.
The only thing that's really helped out a lot is you don't see many logging trucks on that road now.
Yeah, no, some of those turns were right on climax when you first come off 88. They're pretty tight for a big rig to make through, especially a semi.
Had two or three school kids die going off that bank just not all that long ago.
But just the last piece to round out the presentation, that's the end of the formal slides. I did want to discuss the right-of-way component briefly as it relates to Phase A. So we have identified within Phase A about $1 million of right-of-way acquisitions. That would be permanent acquisitions and temporary construction easements. There is a utility component to that as well that we're still in the process of identifying construction costs for. But that is a significant reduction in the overall ultimate right-of-way footprint than what was cleared within or currently being cleared within the environmental document. And then we do have Brenda Shrimp from Bender Rosenthal to briefly talk about how we would approach the right-of-way on the project.
Mr. Chairman, board members, we're really excited to be working on this project. The right-of-way component is mostly temporary construction easements. Not just walk through the phase one, there's also a phase two that's proposed future, and of course the phase one elements are not finally designed. There will be probably some tweaking along the way. Our current proposal would be to purchase the right-of-way for phase one and delay any right-of-way for phase two until such time as that construction was funded or programmed. Unless, of course, there were some parcels where permanent right-of-way was needed for both phase one and phase two, at which time we'd like to negotiate with the property owners to get the ultimate right-of-way if it's identified. Any temporary construction easements or temporary rights needed for phase two would necessarily be delayed because of the time it takes to, when you buy a temporary construction easement, it's renting property. And you have to have a termination date, and not knowing when construction is doesn't make any sense to buy a temporary right that far in advance. We do expect that we will be working very closely with the property owners all the way through prior to and during construction so that they understand the schedule, that access is maintained during construction, and that businesses aren't disrupted.
So just for clarification there, you've adjusted the estimate for right-of-way take downward, at least for Phase A?
Yes, we have.
I think the original project identified 97 parcel permanent and temporary acquisitions required, and I think we're down somewhere below 50 right now. Brings some emphasis, you know, if there's parts of Phase B, which are not going forward with Phase A, acquiring those rights right now is not a good idea. There's limits on how you have to have construction funds identified before you can make the right-of-way acquisition. So I know it was one of the desires was to get all the right-of-way that's necessary. One thing to keep in mind is currently we have a Phase A that stretches the corridor. Before we were talking about a Phase A that was at Volcano Road. So now we have a corridor-wide Phase A from a little bit west of Ridge Road to a little bit east of Tabode Road. It's inclusive, and it gives pretty much a 20-year design life throughout the corridor for traffic impact. So we've got a lot of benefit out of rearranging this to have a corridor-wide Phase A.
Good. Good work.
Definitely.
So this time, again, staff, Mark Thomas and Amador County staff and right-of-way staff is available to answer any questions that may be have generated right now through the last presentation, and then or have public questions and comments.
Okay, this might be one for the consultants too, but the downtown Pine Grove area where you look at the options, maintain existing pavement, standard curbs and driveways, rolled curb and sidewalk, would Caltrans specifically be opposed to that rolled curb and sidewalk, in your opinion, in favor of the traditional sidewalk?
And we certainly something we would have to coordinate with them. There is precedent for things like roll curb for access, like you would see through downtown. I believe up in the Tahoe region, they do have some roll curb elements. Certainly something we would have to discuss with them, but I do think it's an attainable standard and a design.
Seems to make sense in some of those areas in downtown.
Yeah. Especially with the number of businesses you have there and the type of access that they have.
A driveway cutting through a sidewalk every 100 feet.
Right.
That was a unique section of the project from Ridge Road to Irish Town. And if you look at how people take their access, they pretty much take parallel access off there. The rolled curb would allow them to get off of there. And that's one of the things that they looked at. And then also maybe just a kind of a demarc sidewalk by via means of striping so people could still use it the same way they're currently using it with least disruption to accesses to the businesses and the residences, again, between Ridge Road and Volcano Road.
And it would define the boundaries of the businesses' actual parking areas so that they didn't encroach out into the actual roadway. Yeah.
You know, I had a question. It talks about maintaining on Volcano Road, maintaining a 5% grade super elevation on State Road 88 to meet the ADA. So that means you basically can't drop an intersection because you got to try to make ADA path of travel.
And then maybe I'll go back to our slide. What we were referring to.
There you go.
So if you look at the design that is currently in the PA&ED phase in the environmental document, there is a significant grade adjustment along Highway 88 in order to maintain and correct the profile, not only for the realignment of Volcano, but to maintain that ADA access across the intersection. What we've done is provided these crossings to meet that ADA requirement at the existing intersection, without a significant profile adjustment. So we're adding a little bit of asphalt to make those cross slopes within that 5% range required by ADA, but not having to essentially dig out the entire road and correct that profile to make that happen. So that was one of those value engineering design adjustments that we made and looked at in order to provide just a safe ADA crossing while utilizing as much of that existing pavement as we can.
Question for you. If you had 20% slopes, how would you make a safe ADA crossing?
Well, what we're talking about...
I'm just saying hypothetically.
Hypothetically, if it was a 20% slope,
yeah,
you would either raise the road or lower the road in order to make that slope attainable. And Jack, do you...
What I'm saying, if you have mathematical impossibilities to make an ADA crossing, how would you do it?
Right, you have to adjust the crossing. So what we've done, and I believe it's 5% on Cross Super, right?
Yes. Cross slope of the highway is 6%, so the maximum allowable for ADA is 5%. So we're kicking up the low side of ADA roughly a foot just to make that 5% requirement.
I guess the question I have is, okay, what about if you have a 10-foot difference in elevation? Is there ever a point in time you see you can't meet it?
That's in the current project report and environmental document, remove that. It's called super elevation. The current design removes that entirely, and then you just have a standard. So there's a lot of cost associated with that because you're constructing most of the highway. What we've done is just by means of, overlaying portions of the road, we can correct the requirement and save a lot of cost with this design.
Okay.
Thank you. You've done exactly what we asked you to do, not just spend money like a previous engineering firm was. I better leave names out of it or I'm going to get political here. Good job.
A couple more questions on this same one. Signal warrants, how close to they are being met there?
At Volcano? They're met. So we need a signal there. Yeah, there's no question about the signal.
Have you consulted with the school district to see by 2030 or 2040 whether they're even going to keep their school there, or are they considering relocating it at all?
Yeah, we have not had any coordination with the school district yet. We wanted to get a handle on what the design options were as we move through designs, I think we would have those discussions. But
I think it'd be worth consulting with them first to see in 2040 or 2045, are you still going to have the school there before we put a bunch of work into it?
That's exactly, you know, great point, especially when it comes to acquiring that parcel on the end, if it's not necessary. Right now we've got a phase A that doesn't require that acquisition. It requires a relocation of the driveway, but there's not a purpose in spending, even if it's a reduced cost now because there's not an operating business there, it's not necessary.
Unnecessary, but it sure would be nice to know in the future. They can plug that in right now.
That would have been nice to know on the original plans, too, before Dawkins was going crazy. I agree with you, Richard.
So we're
going
to wait to ask the question, though.
Well, you know,
it seems to me it'd be easy to pick the phone up and consult with the school district now.
You know, I talked to the superintendent. It's been probably a year ago, and he said, not saying he was correct necessarily, but he didn't really see a problem with the Pine Grove School as far as access. Now, I think personally, it's if you park there and watch the traffic queuing up and waiting to go into school, it was a problem at times. Is a problem at times.
Yeah, in front of Munnerlands and Sierra House and those places. Yeah.
And one other question, just something to bring up on. It'd be Mount Zion Road just to the west of it. The county's looking, or AFPD is looking at putting in a fire station at some point in time. Is this something we could kind of make an allowance for as far as we're putting in that, that's where we want to put one of those
chain up areas
in?
That's a good point. We do have a piece of property.
Off the screen. It's off the screen.
Yeah. That'd be in your chain up area slide, but not showing any detail. I think it's better than the one that's proposed.
Middle star, right about in there.
Yeah, it's right in there. Yeah, I forgot all about that. It's a real good point. We eventually will have a firehouse there, and we may even have to, you know, have some sort of controlled intersection for the fire.
Yeah. Probably down the road a little ways.
We're down the road, but nevertheless, we don't want to keep our eye on it.
It's a better chain up spot than that one down by Climax anyway, because at least it's flat.
Yeah.
The one down by Climax, you're pulling off on a grade to put on chains.
Our goal for the board today is to, again, get you guys to ask you to adopt the resolution that was included. We want to allocate the $1.61 million in plan specs and estimates so that we, when the PS&E phase is concluded this winter, January, February, March, we can move forward with the design of this project.
And there's a little typo in your resolution too. Program needs another M. And also, you will look at, bring back some more information as far as the lane widths, as far as 11 foot versus 12. And okay. You know, at this time, before we have a vote in this, I'd like to hear from the public if they have any comments they'd like to make. If you would please come forward, state your name for the record, and sign in.
Cyril Toma, Amador County resident. First, I'd like to thank the board for taking a little local approach and common sense approach to this project up there. I think Aaron and his staff and his consultants seem to be going on that. The only thing that I wanted to comment on, or basically to ask a question of, is the Climax Road intersection. Is the Peterson Ranch dedication being considered?
Yes, sir, I think
it is.
The proposed realignment is contained within that dedication. But there was a dedication made, and the realignment of Climax Road goes through that dedication. That's utilization of that previous dedication.
So that would be the proposal for this would be use that alignment versus the existing road?
That's correct. That other squirrely, windy right. section would be abandoned.
Good. Thank you. Rex Onetto. I just got in a little late, but I've heard talk about the 11-foot lanes. Has any consideration been given for permit loads? Highway is a major route for permitted loads. A highway legal truck, if you measure tip to tip in the mirrors, is approximately 9 foot 6 inches wide. A load legal can be 8 foot 6 inches. Plus, there's rules for tire bulge on low beds. So you're talking, they're a little bigger than those numbers. If you got a traveling corridor of 11 feet, you're cutting it close. I don't know what the distance is for turn lane, but it's like you park your car in the garage and it looks big till you open the door. That foot and a half or 2 foot the side of the car is not as big as you think it is. And permit loads, basically, I haven't looked at the permit there for a while, but you can go up to, I believe, 11 or 12 feet without a pilot car. That rate, plus in the wonderful world, if everything's perfect, yeah, if that truck is tracking dead perfect in a perfect straight line. Well, not everything's dead perfect. A slight turn, the trailer's going to cut a little bit, so 11 foot is cutting it really close. They designed these roads back in the days for wagon. I don't think they ever dreamed trucks would be as big as they are. Should leave a little room for the future, not just cut it right down to bare metal.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, the wrecks that Caltrans will have their say on that, because it is, as we know, all Sierra, Trans-Sierra crossing and no obstructions.
As long as they take that into consideration, it is a permitted, a fair amount of permitted loads do come over there.
I think at the end of the day, they'll probably say 12-foot, but yeah.
I want to provide one piece of clarifying information in there with respect to the width of the lanes. The lanes are 11 feet wide, but where we have on-street parking, there's a bicycle lane that's 5 foot proposed, and then where there's not a on-street parking, there's an 8 foot wide bicycle lane. So if you had on-street cars parking, then you're going to have, again, essentially 16 foot wide. It's a white stripe lane for the bicycle lane. But you're right, we will be going through Caltrans for any approvals like that, but it's not going to be an 11 foot wide tunnel. It will feel wider than that. Just
curious question. Saying 5 foot bicycle lanes. Now, isn't the state law that you have to remain 3 feet from a bicyclist or something along that line? I think it is. And the question I have is that bicyclist is right on the edge of their travel lane. Do you have to stay 3 feet away from their travel lane?
I'm not sure if they're in a protected lane, if that's any different, or if that's on the regular road. That's a good question.
Caltrans standard bicycle lane is 5 feet wide. I mean, I think that's a nuance that I hadn't thought of until you mentioned it. But again, their standard is 5 feet, and I knew the state law. I guess technically you would need to move 3 feet away from the bicyclist if he's riding right on that line.
I mean, if you got a bicyclist with an attitude, he wants to ride, right at the edge.
Yeah.
We all know the reason that was passed is for the legislators breezing around downtown Sacramento on their bicycles.
Those over-width loads with a big old dozer on them, it'd be just like a cow catcher on a train with a bicyclist there.
Or a couple of comments.
Well, thank you. Any more public comment?
Make a motion to approve a resolution supporting continued with refinement.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Carries unanimous.
Again, I'd like to offer my thanks to staff and the engineering firm, Right Away folks. This is, to Mr. Tomo's point, this is exactly what we were looking for when we were first presented with a $40 million project that spent the next 20 years of Amador County's STIP funding monies all in one spot. So I appreciate you. Value engineering this for us. Good job, gentlemen and ladies.
I have to agree with that. I was very impressed.
And likewise, I appreciate your efforts and good job. Wish we had more of the public here to see what you've done. I think it's really good. And hey, Aaron, also, I think as to the question Supervisor Morgan brought up about people not having information, I think people can contact you and probably get a they get a copy of this presentation we had, I'm sure. Yeah. So, I mean, so if they have any questions,
right,
contact him.
Yep.
You know, at this time, thank you. This time we'll take about, we're going to make a short break, about 5-minute break, and we'll come back 10:30.